Kalbi Chim is not like a everyday thing, you know what I'm saying? It's like special occasion. It has a little bit of royalty to it, you know, like it's an event, you know. But I always considered it to be one of the more bougier kind of dishes in Korean culture.
Definitely bougie. Like no one really grew up eating this. It's expensive.
And I don't really be cooking like that. So is it? It takes a minute to like make this. It takes a while to make this.
Like 3 hours. Wow. So I was up at 6, so I can make this for you.
Thank you. What an amazing podcast.
I could have like bought it. You know, this is the thing. I could have bought the Kalbi Chim and just brought it.
Yeah.
But there's nothing. I like connecting with my guests, and that's why I cook. Welcome to Get Down with K-Town. I'm your host, Esther Choi. Hey, guys. So today we have someone that I had admired from afar. One of the most significant pioneers in the Korean hip-hop scene. Rapper and actor Jonathan Park, a.k.a. mostly known as Dumbfounded. So what do people call you? Do they call you Dumb?
My mom, since a young age, has called me Dumb, but not because of the nickname. Just, hey, Dumb. No. They just call me John or Dumb.
Okay, because I was actually going to say, does your like mom call you Dumb?
Yeah,
like,
no, she really does, though. I mean,
but even now?
She's embraced my whole persona as Dumbfounded, you know? Mm-hmm. So she would call me like, hey, dummy, or dumb. Like, she's real
That's
cute
so
with
cute.
It. Yeah, it's super cute. Yeah.
And she speaks like perfect English? Or?
Perfect. No, she actually speaks, because we're from Argentina, so she speaks Spanish and Korean. And she never had to learn English because we're in L.A.
Uh-huh.
And there's a gang of Koreans, there's a gang of Latinos. So she never really learned English well. So it's still kind of like...
But she still calls you Dumb.
Yeah, she'd be like, hey, Dumb. Yeah, but it's funny that she just knows Spanish and Korean. And like our neighborhood is just filled with both Koreans and Latinos. Mm-hmm. So she never really had to learn English too well.
I feel like it's like that in L.A.
For sure.
Okay, so Dumb made a name for himself in the early 2000s by going to open mic evenings, right?
Yeah.
Rap battling and freestyling. Yep. And this is like during the time you were like honing your craft.
Yeah, I mean, I started rapping when I was in like freshman year of high school. That was like 14, 15 years old. And I was just really immersed in the Los Angeles hip hop scene. It's so weird because I feel like kind of an OG now because I'm turning 34 in like 3 weeks.
Is 34 OG for being?
That's like 54 in rap years, pretty much. It's like dog years, you know what I mean?
Wow.
But it is. I mean, if you just consider, you know, kids getting signed at like age 16, 17 right now off of
that's
viral
right.
TikTok clips, you know what I mean? Like so it's a different generation for sure.
So I guess you got to figure it out, right? You can be one of the old rapper guys, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, to me, it's like as I go into writing for TV stuff to acting, like I bring a lot of that humor in aging in this youth-driven industry into the creativity. Like I feel more vulnerable and secure with myself to talk about these things, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because you've been through it. Like you released several hit albums. You really made a real name for yourself in the world of hip-hop. You're dabbling in acting, and you have dabbled in acting, and you're now acting more, right?
Yeah, well, it was always a passion of mine. I think when I was a kid, I actually had an agent for like a short, like 2 years as a child actor.
Child actor, like
I was
how
in
old?
Like a PlayStation 1 commercial, and like I was
when,
like
when you're like 10
and Fox
or 11?
Network. Yeah, I was like 10, 11, and then I went and got into high school, and then. You know, I got more into music because I was a stoner kid and, you know, just weed and music, it just connected. So, but I was always creative, so I wanted to make and create stuff. But all of a sudden, I got more into music and hip hop. I was always a class clown. So before I even started making music, I was more into battle rap. So I kind of fused my passion for comedy and hip hop together, which is kind of battle rapping, you know, like where you can comedically insult somebody or, you know, whatnot. So
when you were battle rapping... Which, honestly, like, I am just learning about all this.
Yeah, no,
it's all good.
It's a long time ago, but that is pretty much what kind of put me on the map.
Yeah.
That was the first thing.
Do you still do it?
No. It's been years, but I'm considered kind of an OG in the battle rap game.
Okay, so does battle rapping still exist? Mm-hmm. Like, people are still doing
it? It's huge. It's still really big. Uh-huh. I mean, they get tens of millions of views. Like, you know, all my battles are in the millions of views. Like,
that's amazing.
Yeah, and I have like 20, 30 battles. I left the scene in the right time. Like,
What does that mean?
Because some people leave after getting destroyed, like in battles. I kind of left while like
you were high
out
like,
there. And some people just stay in it too long. You know, it was hard for me to leave that arena too because I was getting so many views. Like, people were showing me mad love, and it's scary to go from like tons of views in something and then go into a whole nother thing and not expect the same kind of views. You know, I went more into making music. It's not the same thing. You know, I mean, it's like you're battle rapping. You're not making music. You're not touring and stuff like that. You know,
because it's like in the moment, it's impromptu.
It's not always impromptu. It's sometimes it's set up like a boxing match where, you know, two people know they're going to battle each other a month before and they prepare for each other.
Got it.
It's gotten become more of that. And now it's more a cappella. There's no beat playing. You just, you know, say rhymes to each other.
But then you decided to leave that to kind of pursue, like, writing music.
Yeah.
Putting out your album.
I wanted to work on music and getting better at making music because at the time, like, from 14 to 15, when I started, for the next 4 or 5 years, I didn't make a single song. I just focused on battle rap, you know?
So you were doing that at, like, 14, 15 years old?
15, yeah, and open mics. I was going to this open mic in South Central, which is kind of a legendary open mic in Los Angeles called Project Blowed. It was my first time seeing, like, the most incredible, like, rappers in my life. And I was the only Asian kid there, you know, sticking my head in. And at the time, I was so cocky because I was the best rapper in my high school.
Okay.
So when I went to the open mic, I saw, like, 100 other rappers that were better than me. So it really humbled me as an arrogant little rapper kid. And I just got addicted to that place. It was every week for years and years. You know, they just had their 25-year anniversary.
That's so crazy.
I was just that. It's crazy. It's like a staple in Los Angeles.
I can't believe you were that young and you were like doing this, right?
Oh, yeah.
You were the only Asian kid like doing, like in that scene.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, really, you know, Project Blowed was predominantly black and it really taught me, it like unlocked this like confidence in me with crazy because they showed me tough love. Like if I was whack, they would boo you off the stage.
But like, do you think that like motivated you because you were different, you looked different, you had something to prove?
Yeah, people always ask me like, how does it feel to be an Asian in hip hop? Like they want to hear an answer like, you know, that it was much harder or whatnot. No, I think it actually did help me because I did stand out, you know.
It motivated you.
Because even if you're whack, people are curious, like, what is this Asian dude going to say? Like, and hip hop has always been about like being different and, you know, having a different style, a different voice. So I think me being Asian was a thing that kind of helped. You know, people were like, what does this Asian kid have to say? He could be whack or he could be tight. But it was amazing. That's why I really appreciate my upbringing at that open mic.
Okay, so in Los Angeles, you were raised in K-Town.
Yeah.
But you didn't hang out with Koreans.
Nah, I was kind of a nerd. Like, and that's the thing. I think a lot of these Asian experiences in America we hear about right now, right? It's like the Asian kid who was picked on by all these different races in, like, middle America or whatnot. You know, but we don't hear about these cats, like who grew up in like very Asian communities where the Asian kids I was around, they were mean and they were cocky and confident, you know? Like you couldn't make fun of an Asian dude in my neighborhood because you'll get a whole gang pulling up to you.
Yeah, it's like that 90s Korean, like gangster.
The AZN pride. Yeah. Like, you know, these kids were like hanging out in parking lots, smoking cigarettes like all day and like mobbing in huge crowds. And I was kind of a nerdy dude who was into indie films and art galleries and you know what I mean? I was kind of a little art kid, you know what I mean? You know, and also skateboarding and like punk and pop punk and hip hop, like just, you know, weird stuff. Like, art, you know, the school I went to was a lot of artist kids and their parents were artists and directors. So I was kind of a weirdo, but I was still rapping. So when I would rap with the other Asian kids, and there were other Asian kids rapping too in my neighborhood, they sounded like Tupac. You know, I sounded more like lyrical, miracle, spiritual. Like, you know what I'm saying?
I was going to ask you.
Yeah,
like,
I was like really wordy and like nerdy sounding.
The difference between like Korean rap hip hop scene in Korea and then your experience here in America. Like, did you grow up with 90s K-pop, hip-hop, like, Seo-taeji?
I knew about them, but I didn't grow up on Korean music. Like,
but not
I wasn't
Tupac
familiar.
Either, because you said...
No, I grew up with Tupac. I listened to a lot of those things, but it wasn't, like, my style. Like, I didn't... A lot of the Asian kids, you know, they were really on some Asian gang shit, you know? So they sounded aggressive. Like, I wasn't coming from that world, so I just kind of sounded like the way I'm more comedic, you know, and I was more humorous. So I rapped the way I did, and they didn't really, the Asian kids didn't rock with me. They thought I was weird until I started battle rapping. Like, and I started making a name in battle rap because I was the only Asian kid in the battle rap scene. So all of a sudden, Asian kids was like, oh, you holding it down for us Asians. And that was my first time, like, getting props from Asian, like, gangster dudes and dudes in my neighborhood that always thought I was nerdy. You know, when they just started seeing these YouTube videos get millions of views, they were like, oh damn, like there's an Asian dude in the scene in the battle rap world. And there's in the battle rap world, there's like barely any Asians. Even since
I couldn't last.
Even since I've retired like years ago, there still isn't like a new Asian. There's only been like two Asians that really made a mark. And it was like Jinda MC and it's like me.
Why is that?
I don't know. Battle rap is a tough thing. It's the front line of hip hop where you really have to deal with getting roasted like right in front of the video, you know? For every other side of hip hop, you kind of, the battle element in dance, in breakdancing to emceeing, you know, to all the elements of hip hop is like, that's where the front line is. You know, you're really putting yourself out there to be either destroyed or get humiliated, you know, and that takes a lot for anybody to kind of put themselves out there.
It takes a lot of confidence, yet just not giving a shit, I guess, or just knowing your skill, right?
Yeah, it's tough. It's scary. I you know, being in that circle every time you do it, it's not something that you just know that you're gonna kill. You know, you can have it down. You're ready mentally. As soon as you step in, you can blank out. You know, so it's a scary thing. The alarm. I got news. Go ahead and profile them. Mind pro violence. Silence is our yellow boys move.
When was your turning point when you decided to like, okay, now I'm representing my people, like I'm an Asian American, and then you like shifted, right?
I talk a lot about this in, you know, with the battle rap. I feel like battle rap really helped me with my identity, you know, figuring out who I was, because at the time, you know, we all go through this, I don't want to be Asian, like, because, you know, it wasn't lit, like, to be Asian during time.
You were like that, too?
Yeah, for sure. I was, like, the only Asian in my group of friends, you know, and I would see another cool Asian walk into my squad, and I'd feel threatened and shit, you know? But then, to me, what I realized is, like, through battle rap, I think, is because when I would step in an arena and battle somebody, they would hit me with all these things they thought of what an Asian person
is. Like stereotypical shit.
Stereotypes. And what you realize is like, they don't know much. You know what I'm saying? It's like a list of four or five things that every dude, like every battle you watch me in, it's like I get hit with the same lines.
Four things.
Four or five things.
What's some of them?
You know, like, for instance, like celebrity references, right? It's always like Jackie Chan, Jet Li, Bruce Lee, or Lucy Liu. It's like, that's the only like things. I mean, now they might add a few Crazy Rich Asian things or something. But at the time, it was always the same thing, you know, can't drive, like eats cats, dogs, whatever. All those stereotypes. And it kind of really makes you think like, oh man, like there's a very narrow view about Asian people in general when these people don't know anything about us, you know? Which made me like, I don't know, it did something to me, a little fire in me where I wanted to kind of show cats like there's different types of Asians, you know what I'm saying? And my upbringing is different. And I wanted to hold it down in the most clever way, you know, and not be so hacky in the way they made fun of Asians, you know?
Would you consider yourself an American rapper with Korean descent, or are you a Korean rapper from America? Because I feel like this really matters to you, because you talk about your identity a lot and your music is very personal to who you are, so.
Yeah, no, I that's a good question because, I guess a little bit of both. Back in the day, I used to hate when people introduced me as, oh, Korean rapper, dumbfounded. Like, I did a thing on Carson Daly, and Carson Daly introduced me, was like, oh, this next performer is a Korean rapper, blah, 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 dumbfounded. Uh-huh. I was like, why was that even necessary, right?
Yeah.
But then I kind of realized, like, it's actually a big part of my identity, you know, being Korean. And that's also because, like, right, I mean, you know, and maybe one day it won't be as important, you know, and maybe that could be progress too. But there was, you know, I feel like when I hop on stage, like, people see an Asian person. People see this dude on stage. That's, you know, it's not, that's like one of the first things they'll notice, you know?
Of so, course, which it's means, just the way you look.
So it's something that I wanted to embrace now, and I don't want to run away from it, you know?
For sure. So you're a Korean rapper then?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. I mean, that's not wrong.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
If somebody tells me that, like, that wouldn't be wrong, you know?
Yeah.
I would say Korean American rapper. That's important.
Korean American.
Because I think people don't really, you know, it's two different things, the Korean experience and the Korean-American experience. And I'm very, very Korean-American.
Like, would you be able to go to Korea and do, like, that scene there?
Yeah,
like,
how is it different? I've dabbled in it, but I don't rap in Korean. You know what I'm saying? All my songs are in English. Yeah. And then the couple songs I have in Korean, it's just I took one Korean word and I repeat it in the hook. Like, that's the extent of my dabbling with Korean rap. You know what I mean?
Why can't you rap in English and Korean? Like, you can't? Like, you have to be in Korean.
It's hard. I try to do it. I just realized, like, you got to really be there and soak in the culture. And this has also been the problem with a lot of Korean artists trying to break in America, where they try to do an American song and it doesn't sound authentic. Or you see like a K-pop star doing an American music video and trying to do all the latest dances or holding a 40-ounce, like completely appropriating the culture.
Do you think it's awkward?
It's awkward. I mean, for me, as an American, when I hear it, like, I can tell it's not authentic because really, it's not just the language. It's everything. The nuances, the you know.
The swag.
It's the swag. Everything. It just, you know when something's not genuine. You know what I mean? And we're living in an era where kids could see right through that shit.
That's
you know?
True. Yeah. That's true. You have to be super genuine about who you are. How do you feel about, like, the K-pop scene compared to the world that you're in?
I mean, you know, it's, I have no problems with it. It's not my, like, regular listening genre of music, but I don't hate anything, really. You know?
I mean, like, you know the craziness of K-pop right now, like BTS.
Oh, yeah, no, I know. I've tweeted stuff and I've got destroyed by BTS fans
before. Oh, my gosh, they're so scary.
Yeah.
No, they are insane.
I feel like a lot of those fans are very supportive of what I do, to be honest. Like, it's funny, you know, as at one point, like, all my raps was like pure just hip-hop stuff. And then now when I tour, like, my front 2-3 rows are like K-pop fans. And they like, I mean, and I don't even do K-pop music. I don't even rap in Korean, but I think it's because I'm Korean. They support me.
That's interesting. So these K-pop fans are now just fans of Korean culture, you think?
Yeah, and I think that's one part. They know that I really rep Korean stuff in a lot of my content. But if you see those fans, they're not necessarily hip-hop heads. They're like straight up K-pop fans. Mm-hmm. And somehow it's drizzled down to my shows. And it's actually helped me, like, really kind of revive my career a little bit. Not revive, but it just kept it consistent, you know?
Yeah.
Like, shows are still, you know, I still have, like, that fan base mixed in with my rap fans, mixed in with my battle fans. It's a little bit of everything, yeah.
That's amazing, though.
Yeah.
Like, because it's about culture in the end. The rise of K-pop influences every part of Korean culture.
Right.
Which is, I think, amazing.
Yeah, and those fans are diehard, you know? Like, hip-hop fans are fickle. Like, K-pop fans, they will ride with you.
Yeah, to the end. They'll do anything.
They will. They'll go to war with you.
So I wanted to ask you about your inspiration because I read somewhere you actually don't get inspired by listening to other rap.
No, I do, but it's not the only thing, you know? Mm-hmm. I think people have this perception like, oh, you're a hip-hop head and you just, that's like,
we're all
just,
you listen all, to.
All I listen to, but it's actually across the board where it's not even music. You know, I feel like music shouldn't be the only thing that inspires musicians, you know? Like, stand-up comedy inspires me a lot because it comes from a really, really honest and vulnerable place. You can't get that all the time with hip-hop, especially nowadays, because people have this persona and this mask and this hard exterior we put out as hip-hop artists, you know? So sometimes you got to get this vulnerability from different places, stand-up comedy. I do stand-up too, actually.
Yeah.
So that's like a space that I'm really in love with.
I thought that was very interesting because I feel like for a lot of creatives, if you're like into that too much, then you're just repeating. When I started cooking and coming up with my menu for my first restaurant, I couldn't go eat at other places. I had to be in my own zone. Right, so I feel like the creative process is very similar.
Yeah, I always tell people, especially these kids who are in the studio, they're like, I'm in the studio all day. I'm like, where do you get your inspiration from? Because to me, it's like, if you're an artist, 50% should be outside living and soaking in culture and life. And then the other half is how you record that and your experiences on the microphone. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're spending 100% just in the studio, you're not soaking in anything, maybe even from the internet, you know? But you got to be out there living life so you have something to write about in the lab, you know what I mean? So that's how I like to kind of live my life. It's like, I want to have a good balance of, like, work and also curiosity and soaking
life.
Culture. Life, yeah.
Yeah, experiences. Trying to slide in, you goddamn right. When all of this this is over, I'ma grab you. Can you talk to me about your acting a little bit? You're gonna be in Awkwafina's new show.
Yeah, I'm on Awkwafina's show. I'm gonna have sprinkled in on this season, but the second season I'll probably be in some more stuff. And Awkwafina's been a friend of mine for 8 years. Like, I was roommates with her in New York in Williamsburg. I mean, in
Greenpoint
for like 4 or 5 months, and I was living with her. This was like the beginning, you know, for all of us, like me and her. And
what do you mean about the beginning?
Not the beginning. I mean, I was kind of probably doing more stuff musically, but the beginning of the Awkwafina rise was like then, you know, which is dope because if you there's a documentary called Bad Rap. It's on Netflix, and it's the they follow four Asian rappers. It's me, Awkwafina, Lyrix, and Rex Dizzy. And you can, if you watch the documentary, you can see literally the beginnings. So it's great. It's a great doc. It's kind of a slept on doc, actually.
And it's on Netflix?
It's on Netflix, produced by Jay Key, one of our mutual friends. Shout out Jay Key.
Oh, yeah, Jay Key. Of course, I know Jay Key.
Yeah, I'm developing a lot of shows. I go out for auditions, but really, I feel like as kind of the, like a creative in the sense where I can write my own stuff too. Like, I focused a lot on kind of developing my own stuff. So I wrote a show. That's going to be announced. I just sold it, actually, so it's going to be announced.
Congrats.
Yeah, it's going to be announced in like 2-3 weeks.
So you wrote the whole show?
It's a show about me and my life, and I'll be playing the lead in it. And then, you know, there's family elements. But just a brief log line about it. It's about a rapper aging out of the rap game, and he's been dumbfounded longer than he's been John Park. And now that his, fame is dwindling, he's reconnecting with like family, friends, and his neighborhood that he's been so removed from, and like didn't know how to be an adult because rap is such like a youthful kind of industry.
Okay.
So it's called Big Dummy, and it's gonna come out soon. Like, we're working on it.
That's amazing. And TV network or
it's a streaming service. Okay. But yeah, should be announced soon. I don't even know if I should have said that, actually. I think it's cool.
But well, by the time this airs, you'll be good. So
I think so.
Yeah. That's amazing. So it's heavily about your life. It's you.
Yeah, yeah. And it's my relationships with my family, too. It's a very broken kind of family. You know, my parents split since I was super young. Dad, kind of alcoholic, gambler. So there's a lot of these elements that I feel like people don't talk about. Like, we hear a lot about these immigrant success stories, but we don't talk about sometimes in pursuit of the American dream, the family gets broken up, you know, because that pursuit is so aggressive that you forget about the little things. And I feel like with my family, a lot of that happened, you know. So we talk kind of about that, and it's about mending those relationships too.
And you came over here, I read somewhere where your mom brought you over here from Argentina when you were like 3 years old with your sister.
Yeah, my mom actually carried me and my little sister, who was one and I was three at the time, through the Mexican border to coyotes. Like, that's illegally.
That's so crazy. Are there a lot of stories like that?
Yeah, there is. There's a lot of Asians who immigrate. Like, most of my uncles and aunts are from like Peru, Paraguay, like Argentina. I don't know much about those roots because I came here such a baby. But you know, it's pretty interesting. I don't really know why that was the case. You know, but there was, I guess.
After the Korean War, the government paid all these Koreans to go to South America.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, and that's why there's so many Koreans in South America. And then from there, they didn't want to stay there because obviously the living conditions.
The opportunities wasn't that much for like a Korean person there.
Yeah, and of course the American dream is the American dream. So a lot of people came over to Los Angeles to settle here.
It's the same thing, I feel like, with my parents and their pursuit of the American dream. And my show is kind of the same. My storyline is the same thing where I feel like as I get older, like I don't, you know, maybe I didn't enjoy the little things, and you know, those little things become the big things, you know. So it's about that, and maybe like catching myself slipping into the kind of the same thing, because we're all focused on this like big, big dream, you know. We kind of forget about all the little between stuff, and the journey is like really the reward, right? So
exactly, it's the experiences and that's what matters. I'm looking forward to seeing what you have in store for your future. So you're working on Awkwafina's show and you have your own show in the pipeline. Anything else exciting that you want to do or pursue?
I just stay working and just making stuff, you know. Like, to me, it's just, you know, I've always just made video stuff that wasn't even music related, you know. So I like putting on a lot of artists, like up and coming artists, you know. I just like staying curious about culture, you know. And I think that's the main thing. I never really feel old because I'm up on everything. Like, I know everything on that's going on the internet, like a 16-year-old kid. You know what I mean? Like a 16-year-old TikTok star. Like, I know everything, like, that's going on online. Yeah.
Like, yeah, your tweets are like, I'm like, oh, wow, he really knows everything.
Just stupid stuff, yeah.
So your podcast, Fun With Dumb.
Yeah.
You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so, I mean, it was just a podcast that I just want to start and kind of talk to a lot of my friends who are doing cool stuff. But it did become pretty focused on, like, Asian and Asian American. Only because I think I had a wide network of creatives that were Asian descent, mm-hmm. but it's not limited to that. We got a lot of interesting interviews coming up, but it spans like really wide from fashion to musicians to like we had a magician, that guy Shin Lim, who won mm-hmm. America's Got Talent, to like Roy Choi, Awkwafina, obviously a lot of comedians. It's cool. It's yeah. fun. It's like just once a week.
I mean, it's really funny.
Yeah. Just try to keep it cool and fun. Yeah.
Awesome. So I was up really early. I know I told you this, but I was up really early because you said your favorite Korean food is kaibijim.
Yeah.
So I have made that today, but I made it spicy. I don't know if that's okay with you.
Yeah, that's okay. That's not my favorite version of it, but it's
oh,
cool.
It's not. Oh, damn.
It's okay. No, I usually like the regular one.
Okay.
But spicy is always good. It's weird because I love spicy stuff.
But you don't but like
the
your kaibijim?
I like it regular. I don't. Yeah, but this
damn,
should be fire.
I screwed up.
It's okay. No, you didn't. You're
I
good.
Thought I was like being like, well, so.
I should just like kept it, you know, like I should just lie right there. And just been like, I like the spiciness.
No, I like the realness. It's fine. Like, my mom made meon garbichim for me, like spicy garbichim. So I wanted to make that version for you.
Okay. Whoa, this looks fire.
All right. So what's your fondest or best memory with garbichim? Like, why is this your favorite Korean dish?
Well, garbichim is not like a everyday thing, you know what I'm saying? It's like special occasion. It has a little bit of royalty to it, you know, like
I mean, it comes from right. you know, the royal cuisine,
like, yeah, it's an event, you know, but I always considered it to be one of the more bougier kind of dishes in Korean
it's definitely
culture.
Definitely bougie. Like, no one really grew up eating this. It's expensive,
and I don't
you know?
Really be cooking like that, so is it it takes a minute to like make this? It takes a while to make this,
like 3 hours. Wow. So I was up at 6 so I can make this for you.
Thank you. What an amazing podcast.
I could have, like, bought it. You know, this is the thing. I could have bought the kaibijim and just brought it.
Yeah.
But there's nothing. I like connecting with my guests, and that's why I cook.
No, I love that. I love that. I mean, I'm not complaining. And then also, I just love that, yeah, you put in that much heart into the podcast because I half-ass online.
Stop
I barely
it.
Do any research.
No, come on. Yeah, well, you know, that's why it's raw. And, it's like, for me, it's.
Should I bite into this?
Please do.
Okay, here we go.
All right. Please do. I hope it's as good as your mom's.
This is good. Really good.
And like LA's Korean food is like insane. And I know that there's that garbichim place that's so famous, Hanundang.
Yep, it's right next to my favorite bar. You can
so
find
you
me there.
So you probably go eat that like all the time.
I don't actually.
You don't?
I don't. My favorite kaibijim in Koreatown is in this place called Seongbukdong.
Oh my god, I love Seongbukdong. I was just there the other day.
That's my favorite kaibijim.
The gukbap there is very good.
Yeah, gukbap is fire. It has like a different thing to it, right? Like than most gukbaps, like
it's its own thing because I've never tasted gukbap like that. And it's like they ferment the cabbage. I think that's why.
Is that the ugoji?
Mm-hmm.
I love ugoji kaibijim was like the thing I was gonna put maybe for the third one because for some reason I just love ugoji. What is that
ugoji.
Again?
So ugoji is dried cabbage.
Dried cabbage, yeah.
Yeah, it's dried cabbage. And it's just cabbage, but it's done in this way where it's preserved. So it gives a different texture and dimension. So I love ugoji as well. It's very, mm-hmm. like, homey thing. But Seongbukdong ferments it. So that's why
it's kind of different, right?
Tangy.
Yeah.
It's so delicious. That
this is fantastic.
Okay, can you describe what you're eating to our listeners and...
Yeah, the braised short rib. Is that what it is, short rib? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Braised short rib, you know, probably cooked for hours. And then when you bite into it, it's like super tender, like peels off the bone pretty much. And then usually the carrots and potatoes are just really sweet. It's like a sweet spicy. It's not like when it's... Mm-hmm. This is a spicy version, but it's not really spicy. It just has a little kick. And
usually,
that's why I like it.
Yeah, usually it's just soy braised, so it's like salty and sweet.
I like this better because it's not as spicy as like the other spicy ones. This is good. this is good spice. Like, this is closer to the version I like, you know what I mean? So
yeah, but it still has, like, that red, like, kind of spicy, deep flavor. Because I add gochujang to this one. Yeah. And usually, Maeun Garbitjang does not use gochujang.
If you go to a Korean restaurant and order this dough, it's probably going to be the most expensive thing on the menu.
Of course.
Yeah, it's like...
I mean, it's expensive and it takes a long time to make.
I think at Jeongbukdong, this shit is like $60. Like, for real.
Is it $60?
It's like, it's somewhere between 40 and 60, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a luxury food item.
Like, you know, if it's $60, there's a grandma slaving away in the back there or something. Like, she is going ham.
Yeah. Did you try the potatoes? So I do a little bit, I do something a little bit different. I add sweet potatoes.
It's good.
Just so it's like, you know, level up. But it still tastes like grandma food. Doesn't it taste like grandma
food? It's mad good. And I already ate lunch, but I'm going in. That's crazy.
What'd you have for lunch today?
I'm on like a meal plan thing. I'm like a big, I'm on some fitness thing right now. God. I know.
So did I ruin it with your?
Yeah,
with
but I don't care. I'm not going to let you throw, you know, kaibichim in front of me and disrespect it. Like, it's fire, though. This is great.
Amazing. Well, where can our listeners find you?
Everything at, just at Dumbfounded, spelled D-U-M-B-F-O-U-N-D-E-A-D. I have, like, hundreds of videos on YouTube. Spotify, you can check out my music and my podcast, Fun with Dumb. And yeah, stay tuned for more stuff. I'm trying to get my cooking skills up this year too. So
really, if you need lessons, you know who to look
for. Yeah, for sure.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, and thank you for cooking. Appreciate it.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, please subscribe and leave us a 5-star review. Get Down with K-Town is a production of iHeartRadio and was created by our executive producer, Christopher Hasiotis, and me, Esther Choi. Follow me on all social media at Choi Bites. And I'd also like to thank our producer, editor, and mixer, Marcy DePina. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.